Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everybody. This is Shisada. Welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. We're going to go ahead and get started. There's kind of a lot to cover tonight. So I'm going to ask you to take a nice deep breath and get yourself centered. And let's clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ and the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the Sapphire Blue Ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zakiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the Violet Flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light for each one of us. And I ask that they surround us and go to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you, to humanity. I place myself in service to all of you listening. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Come back to me. Now let's get going. We've got PLAN and Tim and Megan and Linda here with us tonight. We just came out of session, and it was a good one. One of our people in group said it felt like an acid trip, which I've never taken acid. Linda's over there laughing. So I don't know about that, but it was a wild ride. I will say that. So let's see if I can't reground myself and speak to all of you who are coming in fresh tonight. And I will wish you all a happy Easter ahead of time. Easter is kind of on my mind because, of course, it's Sunday. And with that comes thoughts of Yeshua ben Joseph, or who most of you know is Jesus. And we did a whole lot of talking about Jesus in our session here in Charlotte. I think Jesus has taken a bad rap unconsciously from the collective. And I want to talk to you a little bit about hang on just one second. You're distracting me. Sorry. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the promise of the Messiah. Okay. So let's not confuse Jesus, the individuated person on the planet, with the Christ. Jesus was representative of the Christ, but the Christ is every single one of you, okay? So remember that at a very fundamental level, you as the divine in physical form are the Christ. Only you have forgotten who you are. The Christ didn't disappear. The Christ didn't retreat. The Christ didn't go anywhere. There's nowhere to go. It's just the in the state of amnesia that you're existing in currently, you aren't experiencing yourself as Christ. All right. So for people who have, and a lot of people who would listen to me or who would end up, you know, finding me, a lot of these people have issues with religion and a lot of issues with Christianity. That is not unusual. I was one of those people because I was raised a Christian, but it always rubbed me the wrong way because the whole thing of, you know, God being masculine never resonated with me. And the thing of holding Jesus on a pedestal never resonated with me, or having to sit in a church didn't resonate, like all of these things. But I always loved my knowing that sat there about what it all was about, you know. And as someone who was raised in the Christian faith, like I took, the way I always viewed Christianity was that it really was just the New Testament. I never understood why the Old Testament made it through the whole Council of Nicaea thing. It holds polarity in place. But if you just sit with the New Testament, with the actual words that were recorded, you know, through time, that came through the essence of Yeshua, those words are incredibly powerful, just incredibly powerful. And those resonated with me. Even though they don't, people cling to them as if, you know, their life depends on it, but then they don't actually live them, you know. So there's a lot of hypocrisy around it. And I think that's why a lot of people get very frustrated with the whole church thing. It's because people who have come in, and if you're listening to me, you would be one of them. If you have come in to this planetary system, this fallen system, to be of service to a fallen humanity, and then at some point got locked into the polarity game, as it were, then there is that aspect of you, that very deep knowing that gets, that can get kind of triggered with the whole polarized religion thing. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if you're sitting there going, you know, like, I hate religion. Because of course here, you know, as soon as something gets turned into a religion, it loses its power. Now, that's not to say that there isn't power within the teachings, because there absolutely is, and incredible power. So that's what I want to sit with just for a few minutes tonight, which is kind of the thing that's so beautiful about Easter to me, is the promise that sits there behind the concept of Easter. And it's the promise of the Christ, which was given through the act of the crucifixion and then the resurrection, right? Jesus' ascension and then resurrecting that body was, it was put there for a very specific reason, you know? So earlier I asked the group, you know, why did that need to happen? You know, and we had different answers coming around. And one of them was that, you know, he did it to show that you're not the body. And that's absolutely accurate, because you're not. All right. Even though you feel like you're inhabiting a body, everything that you're witnessing is all you anyway. So you're not in anything, but you're not in anything, but you are all of it, if that makes any sense. And that is true. But the greatest message of the resurrection goes back to what his words were that are recorded in the Bible. And I will paraphrase them very loosely because I'm not a Bible person. But when Jesus said, you know, that anything that I can do, you know, you will do, and even better things. When he said that, I mean, there's like, from the time I heard that as a little girl, I took that to heart very, very seriously. And the point was, look, I'm nothing special. That's what Jesus was saying the whole time. At the same time, he owned who he was, which actually was very special, wasn't it? Within the context of this fallen world, he absolutely, you know, manifested himself as something very special. And that resurrection was part of showing that. But it wasn't, you know, I'm special from an egoic place. He was special because he's God. Well, so are you. Everyone is, you see. And when you know yourself to be God, you can own that. You know, you are a unique aspect of the divine. You are an absolutely unique, one-of-a-kind blending of rays of light that only exist in your form. And that is special. Of course it is, right? Of course it is. And you, as that individuation that's never been separate from God, have every right to own that. You know, we're not here to view ourselves as sinners and, you know, worthless people who aren't, capable of reaching the exalted state that Jesus walked in. He came to show that anybody can do that, and everybody will do that. You know, and as I said at the end of our session earlier, God's omnipotent. It's not about to lose itself forever, is it? No. And so I promise, even if it's not this particular lifetime, you are going to ascend out of this fallen sense of reality. And in a sense, you do every night. That's something no one ever thinks about. When that body sleeps, there's no identification going on. Yeah. You go off and you are existing in the soul plane. You just don't carry it with you because the veils are in place. So when you wake up, you don't remember it, but you're doing it every night anyway. Yeah. So I want you to stop, you know, kind of identifying. It's another level of identification. Identifying with yourself as being the unawakened. Now, that doesn't mean that all of a sudden you start walking around saying, I am God, and believing yourself to be, quote unquote, enlightened, right? Because that's another level of individuation. And that's just as much a trap as saying that I am unawakened, right? The thing that we do in processing work that points to is that I have everybody, when they go in and they look at beliefs that have been challenged, they'll see that consciously they hold one side of a belief, and then they will witness that unconsciously they're actually holding the polar opposite of that belief. So at the end of a process, they actually take the opposites together, and they have to identify themselves with both sides. So that's its own challenge. Because remember, you're repulsed by the one that's unconscious. That's why it's sitting there in the unconscious. And in you actually finding where that's true for you, where you've been hiding it from yourself, then another level of identification does take place, which is very important. You have to see that. Excuse me, I have a tickle in my throat tonight. After that piece, the most important part that actually dissolves the whole thing is when you move through that and you see that you're neither one. Because in highest truth, you can't be one or the other, and therefore you can't be both. You see? Because if it's polarized, it's not real. And from a higher level of understanding, from a level of understanding that's outside of this paradigm, that is reality. Polarity doesn't exist. It can't. There is no opposite to God, see? In this world we're walking in, that we believe that we're, you know, inhabiting, that is the experience. The experience is that you're actually living in the opposition of the divine. I'd call it hell. I mean, if you're going to think of the opposite of heaven, what would you think? You'd think hell. So, like, in my world, that was always, if hell is anything, it's this. I thought that from the time I was probably 10. Why? Because it's true. There was a knowing there. It can't get worse than this. Now, of course, consciousness can project something worse than this, and people do experience that, but it doesn't make it real, ultimately. So the point is to bring the opposites together and then to see through that. Right? And that's a step you can't skip. You can't skip the owning both sides part. Because there's something called a skipped gradient. If you jump past it, you don't learn the lesson from it. We'll put it that way. Right? if you don't embody it, you can't dissolve it out. You have to embody it first. And a lot of people want to skip that step because of course the ego doesn't want to go in and experience if it's repulsed by something so strongly that it's hiding it from itself, right? It's not going to want to go in and actually experience itself as that, is it? Because it will be uncomfortable, to say the least. Potentially extremely painful. And so people will do what they can to try to skip that, but you can't. You gotta get there and walk in it, embody it, right? Now, it doesn't end there. If you have always thought yourself to be a kind person and then you do self-inquiry work and then you realize that you have been in resistance to being mean, and then you actually go in and look deeper at where you are mean, and you begin to see it. You've been hiding it, so you haven't even seen it because you've been justifying your mean behaviors by using whatever excuses you needed to use to, you know, justify it in a very benevolent way in your own head. When you actually get in it, then you have to own it. Oh, like, oh, wow, I am mean. Look at that. I remember in my journey, I have three kids, as you all know. And for the longest time, I used to get so frustrated because I was constantly picking up my house, you know. And my kids at this point, when I probably went through this, were all under the age of 10. So five people in a house and three of them under the age of 10, it's not going to be an immaculate house, right? Obviously. And I used to get so frustrated. And one day, out of just the blue, I was in the middle of that kind of, God, they're pigs, you know, that thing. And it was like everything just, it was, you know, the light bulb turned on or whatever. In the moment, I was like, oh my God, but this is my projection. So I'm the pig, you know, and it's like, I saw it so clearly and I just laughed. At that point, it was just funny, you know, to actually see one's own resistance and recognize that even though I'm in resistance to it, here I am, I'm still in it. And here it is. It's all around me. I can't escape it. I am that. Here it is. I am that, right? You can look at anything and say, I am that. Simultaneously, it's neti neti, right? Not this, not this. Because ultimately, you're not any of it. It's a faulty projection to begin with. But within the experience of, you know, this being reality for you in the moment, you're all of it. It's all your projection. You're cocooned in your own little world, you know. Your lens is unique to you. And there's lots of overlap between all the individuations on a collective level. But the lens, your perception, is unique to you based on your experience and the specific imprinting that takes place in a lifetime and then multiple lifetimes. So that's the point. The point is owning both and then seeing through it because you're not either of them. You know, the only reason you're identified with either side is because you think one side is good and the other side is bad. You embrace one and reject the other, right? When that falls away, it is what it is. Not as a cop-out, which is how people usually use that term. It is what it is, you know, as kind of almost another level of indifference, but from a very realistic place, like it is what it is. Oh, mess on the floor. There it is. Right? No story, just mess on the floor. So in the moment, what do you do with it? Either you leave it or you pick it up. But either way, there's really no story attached to it. Right? I wanted to talk about the resurrection. How did I end up there? It's like, I have no idea. The point of the resurrection, just to go back, is that promise of the Messiah, of the Christ, that you are that You are eternal, right? Like, if you believe death is real and Jesus died, well, then how did he come back? Like, where did he come from? You know, he disappeared and then he was here again. Where did he go? You go really deep in this work, you begin to realize death itself is an illusion. It's not real. It's just not real. There's nowhere to go. It's all your projection, right? So there's no space. There's nowhere to go. You're the center point of your own projection, right? It's all around you, but you are the center. You're the pivot point. That's you. So he came to show that this is your nature, right? Not that he did miracles. He didn't do anything miraculous. The only reason you think it's miraculous is because your point of view is so limited, right? Your identification is with physical densification. Therefore, it is extremely limited. You believe that gravity is real. Therefore, you know, a levitating yogi must be a miracle. You believe that, you know, the production of food has to go through a certain natural process. Therefore, the manifestation of bread must be a miracle. You believe that water is viscous. Therefore, walking on it must be a miracle. And the ego takes every single one of those and it uses the physical world as its proof, right? Well, but it's true. So here's the water and look, I'm going to put pressure on it and I go right through it. Therefore, that's proof. So if something happens that's outside of it, that must be a miracle. And what I want to stress with you today, and I want you to really sit with, not just for tonight, but really sit with for as long as you can maintain it, is that your view, your worldview, is completely backwards. All those miracles that Jesus did are your birthright as an aspect of the divine. They are part and parcel to your nature. Removing the energy from a physical form and then moving back into that physical form is not a miracle. It's natural. Moving the will of God for sustenance into the manifestation of bread is not a miracle. It would be natural to what you are as a creator. The beauty of the human being, of the incarnate, right? There are different forms of life, right? So there are the angelics and the elementals and the incarnates. The beauty of the incarnate is that you were made to be a co-creator, right? So God takes itself and takes aspects of itself to make the I am, that then can experience life through its own unique lens and give that information back to the Godhead, which is the greatest aspect of itself. And then the Godhead can experience itself in, you know, myriad forms. Within that, your capacity for creation is unlimited. You see? Completely unlimited. That's what you were created for. To go out and create. And you continue to create. You're just creating in a very limited capacity. Anyone who says, I want to learn to be a creator, doesn't have a clue, because you're creating this right now. It's your projection. It's your creation. What has to change in order for the projection to change? You think like you feel like you're, you know, stuck in a space? You feel like the world happens to you? No. It's the other way around. The world's only a projection of what you believe to be true. And that's not belief from a mental, egoic place, right? It's from your core. And right now, the issue is that consciousness in the form of you is fallen and very limited, stuck in the sense of separation. If polarization doesn't exist and you are existing in that space of what we'll call non-separation, right? Then what is there that could limit you? See, there is no limitation outside of separation. Ooh, that's good. There's no limitation outside of separation, and there isn't. Would bilocation be a big deal? No. Would, you know, relocating your conscious awareness from one spot to another spot be a big deal? No, not at all. You know, like I said, you're the pivot point. And then the problem is people get initially kind of excited by that, thinking, oh my gosh, like they sense they're hopeful when they hear that, right? Because it triggers what I would call a memory that sits within you that of that. Like I said, you go to it every night when that body's sleeping. You and the knowing of it is there inside of you. It's present, right? And the ego constantly covers it up. But the knowing's there. So when I speak things like this and people have that little sense of excitement that starts to percolate, that's because it's triggering your knowing. And it's triggering that understanding that, yes, that's right. That's who I am. And then the ego gets all involved and puts the kibosh to it pretty quickly, right? Versus a child who believes in fairies, and someone can say to them, fairies aren't real, and they'll say, well, yes, they are. From a very innocent place. Why? Because their knowing is intact. They know they're real. Does it matter that they haven't actually seen one? No. But after a certain amount of time, when those questions start to come, well, have you actually seen a fairy? And then the child has to say, and it has to go back through its memory banks and look at everything and go, no. And then what happens? You know, the doubter arises. The questioner sits there going, well, how can you know it's real then if you haven't seen it? And then you look at the, in the Polar Express, right? There's the saying there that seeing isn't believing. Believing is seeing. I think that was in the Santa Claus too. And it's true. If you really get that statement, it's absolutely true. The physical sight is only capable of seeing polarity. You're not going to physically see fairies here. If you're holding out for that, good luck. Because unless the consciousness of the fairy kingdom falls, you're not going to see them with your physical eyesight. Because they're not that dense. They're vibrating outside of the reality that you're walking in, right? But you'll see them with your inner sight. When you're finely tuned, you will see them. They're absolutely real. But it's just the ego that wants to say, but if I can't touch it and if I can't register it with some kind of equipment, or if I can't see it with my own eyes, now I'm not going to believe it. But what if it took the belief in it first in order for you then to see it? You see, it's a vicious cycle. If you're always looking for proof on the outside, you will never get it. So the hope sits there, but the hope is kind of it's a trickster. Yeah. You hope for it, but you know that it's not going to happen. And it won't. It comes from a knowing, right? When you believe it to be true, not from the head, from your knowing, that's when you're going to see it. And when you carry a knowing, it doesn't matter if it's something that actually is going to occur here in the physical form or not. It will not sway your knowing. Of course, people would argue with that and be like, well, that's just stupid. You know, if it doesn't happen here, that means it can't happen. No, no, no. You have to have the understanding that the collective consciousness is what's holding this level of reality in place. So even if your knowing is very pure, even if your vibration is very high, it does not necessarily mean that you're going to manifest bread, because 99.99999 to infinity percent of the souls that are trapped within the system don't believe it's possible. And there's a huge pull on that energetically. It's enormous. That's the trick of really being here and moving into mastery, is that you're walking in a reality that's all your own. You know, putting your faith in it, putting your trust in it, when the world will not see it. The world will not see it. But you can't let that dissuade you, right? And you can't let that distract you. And that's part of owning who you are. That's the beauty of Jesus to me, right? That he came to say, hey, for as horrible as it looks, you know, and he walked the crucifixion and it was horrible, right? From the outside world. He still came back into form saying, look, it didn't touch me, right? The essence of him was untouched. And the same is true for each one of you. It doesn't matter what has happened in your life. It doesn't matter if you were physically abused, if you were mentally abused, verbally abused, sexually abused. It doesn't matter if you've had trauma through accidents, through fires, through drowning, through whatever it was. It doesn't matter if you've had financial collapse, if you've been homeless, if you've been hungry. None of those has touched your soul. None of it. Because that pure aspect of who you are is untouchable by polarization. Untouchable. It is firmly planted at home in God, where it's always been, and it hasn't gone anywhere. And the identified consciousness has projected its version of separation that you're watching like a movie and have begun to identify with. And now you are in the movie instead of viewing the movie. So one of the key things to practice is practice being the observer, right? The personal self and the objective observer exist simultaneously within mind. That's why you're capable of being in the middle of something happening and simultaneously witnessing it as if you're watching it. It's like you are it, but you're watching it at the same time. Yes, because both are happening. And the real you sits behind both of them. If you can witness the witness, then you aren't that witness. Yeah? If you can witness the personal self, you're not the personal self.
You are awareness itself, but the awareness doesn't have, there's nothing in there that's giving anything meaning. Awareness is just awareness, right? The personal self is very subjective in what it gives meaning to. The objective observer is objective in what it gives meaning to, but it still gives meaning to things, doesn't it? Because it can look and it won't be personal, but it still filters things and applies meaning to things. And you aren't even that. You're awareness itself, which transcends all of that. So for now, what you need to be working on very specifically is just be the observer in your own life. Witness what's going on without attaching to the story of it. Because for as horrible as your story might look, right, in any given moment, in just a moment, if you just were capable of dropping the story in that moment, if you could ask yourself, is it real? You know, say you're sitting home and you're stewing over something that happened 10 years ago. And you're still holding grudges about it, and you're still, you know, withholding your love from people because it happened. And you're sitting at home on your living room couch. And in that moment, if you just bring yourself to center and go, is it real? Where is that real? You will see that it's only real in the story that is taking place in the pictures that you're seeing in the mind. And you say, well, of course it's real because I remember it. Well, you're making it now by pulling it up again. How much energy do you want to lend to that? If it was so horrendous, why do you spend so much time putting all of your energy into making it real again? Because you're addicted to feeling terrible. Which seems rather counterproductive, doesn't it? But that's what we do. You know, we're addicted to our own pain. So what am I going to do? Now I'm going to sit and I'm just rehash it all over again. Let's look at it again. Let's look at it again. And every time, let's look for more reasons to be angry at people and look for reasons to judge ourselves, beat ourselves up. I can't do anything right. I'm such a loser. And where is that real? It's only real in all the pictures. And what is a picture, really? Because if you're sitting here right now and you're staring at the carpeting on the floor, and you bring all your focus to the carpet on the floor, no other picture exists. And in that moment, none of the story of the past is real. And it's only real when you bring it back up again and you look at it and you identify with it. Oh, yeah, that was me. That happened to me. I had to go through that. I had to endure that. I had to learn because of that. I. Focus on the carpet. Or whatever it may be. In the eternal now. You know, and it's as simple as this. Of course, we give it all kinds of, we use techniques and we use different processes and have you do this and that and the other thing. You know, it's really completely unnecessary. Really. The mind is so strong that we have to utilize these other things to get it to start loosening up. But really, it's as simple as that. Just bring your focus here and let the rest fall away. You know, all the pictures that you're pulling up led to who you are in this moment. Is that true? In a sense. But who are you in this moment? Really? Who are you in this moment without dependency on all those pictures? Megan could look back at all of her pictures and say, I'm a teacher. In this moment, I'm a teacher. Yes, I know that because I went to college and I got my degree and I went and I worked in the world and then I got a job as a teacher and there's the kids that I, you know, instruct and blah, blah, blah. But if she brought her focus back to the carpet this moment, is she a teacher? No. She's awareness of a carpet. I love it. Are you a teacher? Sometimes. Are you a student? Sometimes. Are you mean? Sometimes. Are you kind? Sometimes. Are you any of it? No. Not really. Playing the game. I'll play the game of teacher. I'll play the game of student. Is Megan a teacher? Sure. She teaches. Right? Could you say she's a student? Of course. Don't tell me she's not learning stuff as she's teaching. Right? You're no different. That's the netty-netty of it all, right? Because, yes, I can sit here and say, in this moment, I am teaching. Does it make me a teacher? No. Because to be a teacher is to be identified with one who teaches. Teaching may come through me, but it doesn't mean that's who I am. Learning may come through me, doesn't mean that's who I am. Because on another level, I witness the teaching. Sometimes I'm as surprised by the teaching as you are. Believe it or not. I've had plenty of moments in my work where I heard words come out of my mouth. I had no idea. Nothing I'd ever even intellectualized before. And there it was. Boom. Who was that? Right? Who was that? This is a good question. It's time to look at who you are, right? All these concepts. We're also locked in concepts. Concepts mean nothing. We've locked Jesus into a concept. He wasn't locked into a concept. And now we've become completely stuck because of our concept. We allowed our concept of him to get us stuck in this reality because, you know, the Son of God. We're unworthy. You couldn't be further from the truth. So it's time to you for you to kind of experience your own resurrection. You don't have to die to be born again. And you don't have to have, you know, someone of some kind of religious stature tell you you have been born again. What is it to be born again of spirit? What is it? We have all these concepts of what that is too. Doesn't mean accepting Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. It means owning the Christ as who you are, right? And then living it in the world in a world where no one understands, in a world where people will, you know, bash you for who you are, and you do it anyway. Because you can. Why limit yourself just because you live in a world that's limited? Do you know that if you pull something up in your quote-unquote imagination, it's real and it's happening right now? And within that space, you are limitless, aren't you? Truly. It's not that this physical reality is real and anything outside of it isn't. And so if I sit in the space of what you would term imagination, it means I'm a daydreamer and I'm trying to escape reality. Allow yourself to sit in the space of limitlessness and allow yourself to really just float in it and soar and experience your limitless self and allow the energy of it to fill you. If that's what you need to do to recharge, then do that by all means. Let it fill you, you know, and then walk out into the world full of excitement and full of love and embracing the world. Recognize when the energy of the world, because it's so polarized, starts to wear you down. And take whatever measures necessary to fill yourself up again. That's part of your mastery. Recognizing your own limitation, not judging yourself for it, just recognizing it. And then taking proper steps to do what you need to do. Just because your energy gets depleted doesn't mean you failed, doesn't mean you've done something wrong. It is what it is, right? Low energy. What are you going to do? Take a nap? Sit in meditation? Have a green drink? Yeah. Whatever it is, right? I mean, there are people who just completely get caught up in that. Like, well, how do you not feel guilty about taking a nap in the middle of the day? Well, it's really easy. If I'm tired, I sleep. Right? Why does there need to be a story around everything? Oh, I can't sleep in the middle of the day. There's just too much to do. And then the laundry doesn't get done. And I, you know. I'll miss Oprah or whatever. Ridiculous. Look at how you've confined yourself and you bind yourself. It is so unnecessary. Cut yourself some slack. You know? Kids are pretty good at that, and then we get angry with them. Or maybe we should look closer at how they're functioning, right? Rather than trying to force their, you know, round little bodies into our square little holes. Maybe we should take a little lesson, be students to our, from our, you know, children's perspective. This walk is a walk of constant fluctuation. It's a walk of constant change. It's a walk of constant failure. And failure is not a bad thing. It is necessary in the world of polarization for you to experience failure in order for you to recognize when you have experienced success. I made a decision. I made a choice. I took action based on that choice. The outcome was this. And let's say the outcome was, say I invested a lot of money and the outcome was I lost all of it. Was it a failure? No. You learned something, didn't you? Money's just money. It's energy, right? So drop the attachment to that piece. Look at what you learned and move forward from there. Don't beat yourself up over it. All right? It's not going to do anybody any good. Drop it. Move forward. Let it go. It's, you know, it's not like I'm saying anything new to anybody. You've heard this a billion times, but it's time for you to actually take it seriously. And now walk it. Walk it. it didn't succeed because for whatever reason, it didn't succeed. So, okay, let's go in and look at, you know, it's not personal. Like, I screwed up. I can't do anything right. I blah, blah, blah. It's not personal. Just look at it objectively. Okay, why did it fail? Why didn't it work? What could have been done differently? Yeah. And then when you have the next opportunity, well, now you have something you can look at that will give you a little more wisdom going forward into the next time you're going to make a choice around the same thing. That's where your mastery comes from. It doesn't come in a moment, like, boom, it's just done. You will continue to walk. You will continue to evolve. And you will continue to grow in your mastery. So get used to the failure. It's okay. It's not a bad thing. There's nothing going on here that's bad anyway. It's all here for your return home, ultimately. All of it. And that's a promise. How are we doing time-wise? I don't know what she's saying to me. Are you saying yes? Are you talking to me? I can't hear you. Put your mic on, honey. I can't hear you.
It's time. Ready.
It's time? Mm-hmm. Okay. So Christ's promise to you was that you are life eternal, right? And the promise was given, and the promise remains. You are that. Now believe it. I love you all. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we will be with you next week. Good night.
Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence.
I sense your presence.
And I am the light within your soul, in the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time, to restore the balance of the universal mind. And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I see aspiring to be free. When I call to thee and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence within and without, above and below, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. Without and within, below and above, yeah, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.
Kadosh, 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 Adonai Elohim Sabayot, Ilham Tulillah, Laylacha Yilallah, Muhammad Rasulallah, Bismillah Rahman Rahim.
And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I find in tune with the divine. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time, to restore restore the balance of the universal mind. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And when I call to thee, and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. For to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy angel of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.